I was still hopeful of getting a couple more folks coming. But let me take a moment and ask Bill if he would like to say a few words on behalf of the Planning Commission. But I would just like to say thank you to each and every one of you who are working on the Planning Commission and also council members to help make out community and city better. It's not an easy task many times. And I knew that when we got on here, I hope everybody did. But it's a real privilege for me to work with you, each and every one of you. And we've got real challenges ahead of us. We're always good. We've had them. You know, we'll come up with 11 items, and maybe we'll get through 6 or 7. Hopefully more, but sometimes. But it doesn't matter. At least we're working on the most important that we think is most important. And we're doing the best we can, and we'll keep doing the best we can. Bill and I had a chance to sit down and talk a couple of weeks ago about how working together, and that was a real good conversation we had, I think. And there are some things I think perhaps that the council can do a little bit better. And let me make a point here, what I mean. As we talked, and I recognize this too, that sometimes some of the items we put on that list may not be enough detailed, or may not give the Planning Commission in the past enough information to even know kind of what direction to go. Not the decision you're going to make, because obviously we're not going to do that. We want everybody's input, of course, so that we all collectively can make the best decision. But I think a perfect example, and we've had some discussion about that, I'm sure we'll have some more as we get into the comprehensive plan, but perhaps this is the best one I can think of. When we start talking about the comprehensive plan, the questions that come up, how far out do we want to go with our comprehensive plan? Are there natural boundaries that we think we should stop at? Won't be a river in our case, but it could be a road, a bypass, or something else. In some cases, do we want to go outside of our utility district? Into New Wellington's or whatever the case may be. We got into this when we talked a little bit about it going south. And I think that's going to come up again because Anderson Farm Road hopefully is going to be paved by the end of 09 or thereabouts. And there's some land on the other side of it that I think the folks are already thinking that they would like to annex into the city. So there'll be a lot of discussions like that. And I can see that the Planning Commission sitting there might help them to know a little bit about our thinking, council's thinking, about how we see that. You know? Do we want to go east anymore? Do we want to go south anymore? How far south? It's a bad thing if we can only serve water, maybe, and not sewer, or sewer and not water. And some of these will be economical decisions, I think, like we had on the east side of Akron. And we were talking about extending out there, and there were a lot of little homes that were going to be built, and we looked at the cost, and Dick brought this up real well, I think. And it didn't look like it was cost-effective for the city to go. So where the old golf driving range used to be. What's the name of that road?
Toolback
Road. Now, that may have been the right decision. We thought it was at the time. It may still be the right decision. But we don't know what's going to go in there. Something's probably going to go in there, and it could be a bunch of trailers. I think that's another point that comes to my mind when we're talking about annexations in general. How do we feel about Akron growing? You know, is it going to continue to grow one way or the other, whether it's in the city or in the county? And do we want to annex to make some of that area look nicer, where we can apply all of our ordinances and those kind of things? Or do we just want to say, no, we're not going any further. Whatever happens out there happens. We suffer the traffic or whatever it is, and we still get the traffic coming into the city, and then no revenue whatsoever, possibly. And I'm generalizing here a lot. But that's the kind of thing that perhaps we can, in some cases, on even some of the other items, if we can give more information, we need to know that. I think if there's ever a time when the commission says, rather than us sitting down talking about this thing for 2 hours, and then we don't know whether the council, whether we even giving the council anything that they really want, or what thing, or even in the ballpark, so to speak. And maybe we can help, without spinning the wheels, but we don't want to do that. So we just need good communications, I think, back and forth, through it, through Archie, through any of us, through me, so that we know if there's a panel. And then we can get together and we can help out as much as we can. And do you think, just quickly here, do you think that that might help in some cases, as you think that some of the issues is maybe?
I think the more guidance and the more direction we can get from council, I think the better we're able to review what our best.
Because I think we probably all agree that the last thing we want is to bring something to city council. And when we sit up here and talk about it for an hour or so, and it's obvious that we're not in agreement with planning commission at all. Now, we ought to be in somewhat of an agreement, at least in the same box or the same circle. So that's our goal. That's my goal. That's our goal as a council and working with the planning commission, because we know that we work just hand in glove. And that's the nature of a relationship. And council appreciates what the planning commission does, let me tell you. That's all I'll say right now. Just thanks again for being here and giving your time and your efforts to helping make our city a better place. Does everybody know everybody? Mm-hmm. I don't. Okay. All right. Bill, would you like to say?
I'd just like to say thank you to the council members here for appointing what I consider to be an outstanding group on the Planning Commission, present company excluded, of course. But this group, I guess through attrition, I'm the most senior member of the Planning Commission, and I've been on the commission about 6 years now. But the group you have appointed is we've had good groups before, but I'll tell you, this group is they're charged. They're interested, they're engaged, and we kind of have a little slogan that we're trying to follow, and that is working together and planning together for a better Aiken. And I really think that this group, with guidance from council on some of these things, can do a lot of good for the city, and I look forward to working with you. And to the mayor's point, most of our applications have to deal with is the application consistent with the comprehensive plan? Is it consistent with zoning ordinances? And we're pretty good at kind of sorting that out. But it's when something is outside of the comprehensive plan without guidelines, then it's my opinion versus Wilkins versus EGLB, and so you don't know what you're going to get. So to the degree that you can give us any kind of guidance as to how you want us to think about these applications outside of the comprehensive plan area, I think we can give you a better end product. So thank you for appointing a terrific group, and just sit back and watch. I think you're going to be pleased with what you'll be seeing.
One quick thing, I think that does meaning that we need some good communications back to us too. If you see this kind of running into a dead end, to get back to us, let us know.
Fair enough.
If we haven't already given enough information. Okay, Mr. City Manager, Roger.
Good evening, everybody, and I'd like to thank the Planning Commission, particularly it was a very productive year, getting a lot of things done last year. You tr- try to list, and we'll do the same tonight, seven to probably 12 different goals to try to work on. In the past years, you've been able to get through maybe about five of them. This is not a race to see how many get done. It's more the quality than the quantity, but we got both quantity and quality this last year. A lot of things we've accomplished. And we see that we're getting down to a little bit more than nuts and bolts of things now. Trying to clear up some of our regulations and amendments that need to be taken care of. So with that, if you could turn to the first page, and I'm not going to read through these at all, but if there's anything in here that you want a little bit further explanation on, so as we get ready to prepare for this next action agenda.
Well, Roger, on that, on the very first one, suggest that you're having further discussions and so forth. Can you just give us maybe a little synopsis of where you stand?
Okay, in January, when this came to City Council for discussion, we had many of the utility companies there. We had a lot of questions about the franchise agreement and how that fit in with the new regulations that would be applied. I have not specifically sat down with any of the utility companies up until that time. Of course, there was one which would be in to do that. So my goal was to sit down with them and do it in the future. I had not done it yet. I'm in the midst of the budget, taking another 30 days or so. So the whole thing with the underground, for those that are not familiar, it all started with the hospital. In fact, that a new road was built near the drive. The wiring was not placed underground. We haven't had a situation before that, we haven't had a situation since that time that has caused us concern. So we do need to get it taken care of and make sure it's cleared up, but it's not one of those things that, because we haven't had lots of situations like this, and it's been a real pressing issue with you to get together for that. Yeah.
I'll just make two comments. Number one, I think that in terms of service, I don't know how many people experienced an outage last the other evening, Saturday evening. We did, and I'm assuming there's still a couple of neighbors that need to store in there. We had some pretty extensive discussions with planning with both utility and the co-op and went together. At the time, they told us that they were not terribly happy about having to do anything underground, but they would do anything that we wish, and it really was a question of cost. I think that's what it revolves down to. So at some point, everyone decides that they want all those lines buried, and it's a question of who's going to carry the freight, who's going to pay for it, and how. I'm sure they could be persuaded to make some sort of a contribution. I think they collect something now which goes into the city, whatever. But that essentially is the bottom line. They'll do anything you want as long as you can work out a solution that they're happy with costing.
In the last 10 years, plus or minus, the only place we have not underground up a new development was at one mine or a hospital. But we have not had, again, the whole. The main department ordinance was to make sure that that doesn't happen.
But that letter that they sent us was pretty addressed underground, putting old wires underground, did it not? They were pretty adamant about that. They're not interested in that.
Right, they're not interested in putting. Now, in the franchise agreement, there is money set aside for them to match our money. Go ahead and put things on the ground.
It was my understanding at the council meeting that one of the major things that they had a problem with the ordinance was the way the ordinance was drafted was of such that if they did an upgrade on a power line, existing power line, then they would in turn have to place that line underground. Whether that be on South Boundary or Grace Avenue or wherever. They, in turn, said, you know, when we enhance a line, which we do quite frequently, you know, that could just be adding a few more volts to the line. It's considered enhancing it. then it would not be feasible for them to place that line underground. That was, I think, what created the problem with the electrical companies, the telephone companies, with the existing above ground lines. So at the council meeting, it was my understanding that they wished to get that changed, which they would be in agreement with signing something saying all the future lines must be placed in. But I think that's what caused the problem. I understand, I mean, you know, once we start, if we go back to some existing neighborhoods and wish to get those lines on the ground, then we're faced with a lot of problems that that's going to create as far as the homeowners themselves, the type of boxes that they have in their homes. Then we get into a situation of who foots the bill for the homeowner's box that must change. I personally would love to see all of them underground, but I don't think that that's something that is feasible at this time.
Unless you have homeowners that are willing to.
That are all willing to.
Put the bill for burying that cable all the way out to the property line. And probably in some areas, there probably are homeowners that would be willing to do that.
Especially after Saturday.
Timing is everything.
Are there any other comments that we're going down the list here? Get to number two. We decided no action on that.
At some point in time, that will be coming back to the council and the city as more and more businesses, churches, etc., would like to have electronic signage. Right now, many communities are waiting to see the attitude as to what is too problematic for a motorist as they're going down the highway and seeing the flashing, changing, multicolored waving signs going back and forth with the message. But there are a number of electronic message boards that are opening up that could go ahead and have a sign that would. We have pretty right now. Millbrook Baptist has one. USCA and Convocation Center has one. Obviously, USCA has one. University Parkway has one. It's not in the city, so therefore, they do will take the message. Doesn't seem to cause a problem. You know, in the frequency and how often you do it. And so it's kind of like how much is too much and how much you allow and don't allow. Again, that'll be coming back as we get more information. There's more studies done on the safety aspect.
National Safety Board is engaged. I don't know if they've completed yet, but it's engaged in a study of that grade. But if you want to see what it potentially, what Whiskey Road could potentially look like for those kinds of signs, take a ride up Washington Road to Point Augusta. And
you don't want that.
Anyway, it's handsome. They're a distraction. And you get 10 of them in a row. You distract somebody. Somebody almost ran me off the road on a cell phone over in my lane. I had to literally go off the road to avoid somebody else. And if you got somebody watching, changing signs 10 in a row going down Whiskey Road, you have enough problem on Whiskey Road now. I mean, it is a problem. I'm not suggesting that
maybe in the right location.
In the right location. But
might have some application.
But I think it needs to be very carefully evaluated.
What was the sense during the council deliberation? It was obviously before my time. What was the sense against making or prohibiting some of those electronic signs? I assume it just didn't seem to be the will to follow the Planning Commission recommendation.
The right now, and the Planning Commission looked at it, so they should stay. Okay. It just came back as an issue, council saying, unless you want to change it. And if you do want to change, you need to get more information to the Planning Commission as to what changes you want to make. There's no real traction on making the changes at this point in time.
You can have an electronic sign. It just can't move or animate in any way. It has to be static.
The message could change once every 24 hours. But, you know, maybe once an hour.
Roger, if somebody wanted to open a restaurant, would you want Hula dancers on that?
No.
That's the question.
Now, given the current rules, so if a business comes in and they want an electronic sign that they can change, they're willing to change every 24 hours.
That's fine.
It's a no-brainer, and it doesn't require approval of planning board.
As long as it meets the size.
I think one thing that was seemed to be a thing that we recognized was with the annexation of Jay Watts' building, where he had his property was actually considered county, but it was technically in the city, and he had a billboard that was contracted, I think, 20 years or something like that, and we were trying to check from a legality standpoint of what could we make him, you know, take it down, who would cover the cost of that, and because our city is growing, expanding, we may potentially have that issue come up where something that's county is technically become city with annexation.
Okay. Issue from thanks to the state office.
Does the county allow moving?
Yes.
County loves everything.
No.
So number three, any questions on that one? Number four.
Jane, didn't you have some?
I wanted to go back to number three, yeah.
Comments, want to go back to number three?
Well, the thing is, we've agreed, maybe I'm not even talking about the same thing now, but I think I am. We have agreed to allow people to speak on first reading at city council meetings. And as you all are aware, at county council, they have like three readings minimum, I believe, which is very confusing to me. And ours is not. I like the way ours is. The only thing I don't like is that even though we allow people to speak at first reading, we don't post it. We only post 10 days before the second reading. And so many times, just in my limited experience on city council, people have come up with wonderful ideas. And I needed to hear them more than 5 minutes ahead of time in second reading, which is why the mayor and council have allowed public input at first reading. But I think to go along with that, even if it's just 2 days ahead of the first reading or just something, so that just in case you don't have any contact with council or you don't know anybody or you're new or something, that you've got a clue that already you can come and listen to what's happening. Because a lot of times we can circumvent a lot of potential problems by hearing what people's worries are right off the top. And we did used to do that. And then we decided that was too hard to do. Or I don't know what we decided to only have to require the public hearing to be posted 10 days ahead. But I think since both of them are essentially public hearings, that even to me, that could be 10 days, just at least a reasonable number of days, a few days ahead of time, so people don't feel that they are not part of the process, you know.
What we did, just, we don't have an ordinance form. We made it a policy internally that we're posting. If the Planning Commission approves something on a Tuesday night, Harper tries it on Wednesday to post that the first reading is going to take place.
Wednesday of the following week, not the day after the Planning Commission.
No, but it would be the Wednesday before the Monday of the first reading. Right. See, I think that's reasonable if that's possible.
By that time, what I've told Ed is 98% of the time, we will know by the Wednesday before the next council meeting if they're going to be on the first read or not. Sometimes they don't go on the first read. Now, we sometimes in between they pass on Tuesday night and on Wednesday, some things do get removed. So I told Ed, post everything on that Wednesday before the meeting unless he hears otherwise. So that still gives them 4 or 5 days to know that, you know, that location something's going to happen. So we're doing that. We just don't have it in a formal ordinance form.
Good. But it'll continue to happen?
Yes. We just make that a policy. When you all change, it said you could speak on the first reading.
That's right.
This is to when there's a broad zoning change. Let's say it's a limited professional. We're going to change something concerning limited professional. Well, it's not like one location throughout the city. We can't notify all the neighbors I mean, we could send out 20,000 letters. So what we're going to do is, if there's major changes, we'll put in our newsletter, put it in some way that most of the people will get it.
It on the front page.
Yes, somewhere where, some kind of box.
Yes.
At one point you had said that, we had talked about the fact that if there were one particular property that was initiating a citywide zoning change, which sometimes happens, couldn't the sign be put at least on that property?
Yeah, that's the easy part, is put on
the property. If they're the reason we're changing it, you know.
Monday night, council's going to be looking at the design overlay district being expanded down south boundary, and Colleton came to city council in September. You all had it in August of last year. There was a 3-3 vote on the planning commission at that time. Went back to city council, and then the people objected to it. We made the changes to fit more than wanted. Again, because it affects a large area, we put out many signs in many locations. And then we wrote a letter to those that came before the planning commission and city council to let them know it's going to be back up again. That's what we're asking. Again, we're certainly open to trying to get the word out to the public in the best way possible, but also the most cost-effective way possible. Anything on number four?
I was for that, but I lost, so there.
Number five, I think it's pretty much understandable. Number six, this is the one that's coming back before, the one that Jane Page brought up. That was one of those that wasn't on the original list. We voted back in.
I only have one comment on that. I think that as a general principle, it's becoming perfectly obvious that encouraging infill in a central district, town district, to encourage a town scale is a much better idea than encouraging people to continue to go further out. And that's a direct development of increased gasoline costs, accessibility to services, and so on and so forth. So I personally don't think it's a very good idea to have a lot of regulations that cause our downtown area to be more fragmented than it should be. And if we adopted some of these things we've been talking about, I think that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, the tech higher density is good.
I think so. In our downtown, in this
area. In the downtown business.
And I think the whole, right, the whole concept of mixed development is certainly one. Certainly, that's a much more accepted concept as opposed to the isolated zoning concepts that we used in the past. Now that we have developments, we like to have accessibility to small stores, retail, whatever, professionals, whatever, integrated into that, which we can do in an area like this. I don't think it's a good idea to be pushing our development further and further out into isolated subdivisions that are long distances, or quite long distances from our central business district. I think it does a couple things. It encourages sprawl by doing that, but it also degrades the whole concept of trying to continue the vitality of our downtown area. We want to encourage our local merchants and our businesses downtown. We don't want them dispersed out into a lot of isolated shopping centers. They serve a purpose, but I don't think we should be encouraging them. We want to encourage the development of the ability of our downtown businesses to thrive here.
To Ed's point, I don't know where you reach the line and then cross over in terms of regulating or over-regulating your downtown area to where it begins to work against you. But I guess I have a little bit of a gut concern that we passed the downtown overlay district guidelines a little over 2 years ago, and they're slowly kind of, you know, taking hold as projects come forth. But a lot of that is still, you know, it's going to take us years to kind of feel all that out. The 2-hour parking limit is underway now, and it's going to take some time to really sort out the winners and the losers and the overall benefits of that. And the the, some of the recommendations in this, particularly the mandatory off-street parking, just one more, and you ultimately have the decision as to how far we want to go with regulating downtown so that it doesn't, we don't overregulate. But I'm just getting a little concerned that we may be, particularly in a softened economy, that we may be approaching that. And that's, I guess, the only point I'd make.
So when you talk about off-street parking, do you mean that for residential and commercial, mm-hmm. or just commercial?
Mm-hmm. We and I guess I would feel differently if we had a problem with residential, then I'd say let's react to that. But we haven't had. And I think it's because it's a market driven factor. I mean, they can't sell these units if they don't. Now we can say you got to have two spots per unit and that type thing. But I guess my simple mind says let's focus on the problems and not on things that might be a problem. But again, that's just my two cents worth.
Well, you know, if we had thinking of the new condos we have down there that replace the old theaters. If we didn't have off-street parking, I mean, there are a lot of different points here. You said people wouldn't buy them because they want a parking spot. But if they would buy them, and we're not going to have probably any more than that expensive downtown, in my opinion. But anyway, if they did buy them, then they'd be parking out, taking up more parking spaces. So my point is that you need the off-street, and that's what we decided to do. I think we passed that, did we not? The off-street.
You asked us to get information as to what other communities require for off-street parking based on per unit and the number of units in a building. In other words, if a building had 9 units, you might want to say 1.5, or at least just, you know, the more units, the more.
Yeah.
You would have some overflow parking possibly.
But I think we were pretty much in agreement that we thought for residential, there ought to be some off-street parking, but not commercial.
That's what we're going to be bringing back to you.
Yeah. As far as if you did commercial, my goodness, you wouldn't have those buildings down there. You wouldn't have Maybaum down there. Think of all those folks that work down there on the retail side underneath the departments. So where would they be parked? This thing is a catch-22 almost, because the more, if you don't have some off-street parking, then you take up more of your parking downtown. Obviously, there are a lot of complaints now that say we don't have enough parking. I don't necessarily agree with that. The Barnwell over by Trinity Home, that area over there has always got 20 or so parking spots. Nobody's parking there.
Yeah. Well, I think that looking at off-street parking is going to be a continuing problem. My wife and I came to Aiken 10 years ago. And at the time we came here, Aiken had just gone through a number of layoffs at SRS. And when we first got here, there were for sale sites all over the town. Shortly thereafter, we went into a boom cycle. There was an awful lot of building. Things have changed dramatically downtown in the 10 years that Mary Beth and I have been here. Now we're back into another stagnated period because of our economy. We also have 78 million baby boomers who are about to retire. We have Aiken, a city that's won a number of awards. Aiken, in a number of publications, gets touted as the place to retire. I can easily see that over the course of the next couple of years, as our economy shakes out, more and more people coming to Aiken, and a larger expansion of the downtown area as well as our rural area. And I think that all of those things are going to have to be confronted, because at some point, I could see we're 10 years from now, that the expansion of Aiken, if it's a considerable one, we'd be looking at a light rail system to get people around Aiken. And so I think that looking at off-street parking, whether it's commercial or residential, is probably not a bad thing to be doing in advance, because I think it's something that's going to have to be dealt with in the relatively near future.
One of the things that worried us, I don't think it even passed the design review committee, but that night, that building with the 9 apartments and there were 9 parking spaces, and you know everybody's going to have 2 cars. And that meant that on that part of Park Avenue, there are going to be 9 cars parked pretty much all the time. That would, to me, not really be a good thing downtown. I mean, and that's another problem that I don't know the answer to, is how much commercial do we want to protect downtown? How much do we want to be sure isn't just housing? You know, in Charleston, especially on the bottom floor, as you all know, they require almost all the buildings to have commercial retail businesses.
On a Sunday, mm-hmm. in the near future, St. Mary's expands. You're going to have more than 1,500 people coming into town at any one given time for a mass. That has also been an effect on your parking. And I know a number of you who may go to that. I know when we come out, sometimes if the timing isn't right, we have gridlock all over the place. And so the traffic is going to increase, the spots are going to be at a premium, and it might not be a bad idea to begin looking down that road to see what you could do off-road somewhere. Because I think eventually you're going to have to do that anyway.
I would say to everybody, but the parking, we decided that we really ought to require off-street parking for residential because everyone was telling us, well, the market will do that. It'll take care of that. No right-minded builder will build unless he does. So then what's the problem? Let's require it because it wouldn't do another anyway. So just to be safe for the one dumb one who comes along and doesn't do it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get us bogged down or sidetracked.
But I think that's why we need some off-street parking as a requirement, not just some.
Well, I just have another comment. It's not directly related to the parking situation, but I think, again, we're all very, very concerned about the vitality and uniqueness of the downtown, and that comes about by having the variety and quality of our smaller retail local merchants as it can become more desirable and more popular. It is inevitable that prices will rise per square foot for downtown businesses. Somewhere along the line, perhaps council is going to have to give some thought as to what, I think everyone has a pretty good idea of what they'd like the future of downtown to be. We'd all like to see it continue to be very much the way it is. But as prices continue to rise, and a few years ago it might have been $6 or $7 a square foot, and I think, I don't know, what is it now, probably $10 or $12 a square foot. It's not inconceivable in a relatively near future that it could be $15 and you get the big chains, an Ann Taylor or somebody like that, or the Gap or somebody who wants to come in. And I don't think anyone, it would change the entire character of the downtown. We suddenly had forced out. A lot of our local people could not afford those rents and substituted the big chains who are perfectly willing to pay much, much higher rents. It would change the whole character of our town. Somewhere along the line, perhaps we need to think about what Jane touched upon, which is if you want to preserve the local retail environment, what should you do to encourage or perhaps, I don't like to use the word prohibit, but ground floor retail space. Right now we have areas downtown that are becoming almost wall-to-wall real estate offices and banks. There are towns, I think one notable one is in New Jersey, that has passed ordinances that prohibits any further banks or real estate offices at ground level within a certain downtown business area. Certainly not suggesting that we do that today, but I think we need to think about a few years down the line when, if the price of retail space in that down the 4-block downtown area, which is our most desirable area, rises to the point where our local people cannot afford that, and we attract in the higher price retail chains, we will have a different town. It will attract different people. Well, at 5 right now, when we have a block full of first floor banks and real estate offices at 5 o'clock, that's a dead zone. Fortunately, we have places downtown that after 5 o'clock are still busy and thriving. There are people out on the sidewalks. That's a wonderful, wonderful aspect of this town. But if we lose that, it will change its character. So I think at some point,
council needs to think about how you could implement a program that would, for instance, as my understanding of the Holly Building, the reason Blanche and Calhoun are on the second floor, not the first floor, the choice, although they would have paid a higher price to be on the first floor, she told them that she did not want her to get upstairs, and they went upstairs. So now you have nothing but retail stores there, and it's an arcade, and it's, I think it's a great asset. But I would hate to see a large part of Lawrence, for instance, in the wonderful downtown area, suddenly become wall-to-wall banks and real estate owners, which very well could if price of real estate rises to the point where some of our good local people can't afford it.
What town is that or city?
It's in New Jersey. Is it Madison?
Madison, New
Jersey. I don't know. And you can, I'm sure, work wonders in your computer. But there are places, even apart, I think, from New Jersey, that instituted that because of the very situation that I described.
Yeah.
And it's a market function. As prices rise, as real estate becomes more expensive, as real estate becomes more lucrative, that's probably the case right at this second, but it'll change. Real estate people will want to be in a very desirable place, and this is a very desirable area. They'll be willing to pay a great deal more money. Banks, at the moment, may not be in an expansionary move, but they will be. They all want to have retail space where people can come in, but they all close it by the way. And I think it would be a great tragedy to have a good part of our downtown go dark at 5 o'clock.
Like it used to be.
Exactly.
Exactly.
The next two items, 7, 8, and 9, are being looked at by the Planning Commission right now. So they'd really be continuing on with those as far as the action agenda that we're currently under. When we think of an action agenda, we think of starting with the fiscal year. Council will be taking the items that are recommended tonight. Next meeting, they'll approve them. We'll make modifications to it. And that list generally turned out in the summertime, since July 1. So we hope that 7, 8, 9 will be completed by that time or almost be completed. So I would not suggest that we put this on the next action agenda since you're already starting. Which then leaves us items number 10 and 11. So if you want to go to the next page, I'm not trying to push you along, so if you have questions.
I just want to make one point that 7, I would hope that whatever we're considering on the land management regarding maintenance guarantees, that somehow doesn't undercut what we just passed as far as the engineer record is concerned. I think there's a sentiment out there on the part of some of the developers that indeed is what they would like to have some. They're trying to already weaken the old ordinance. That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
So. Well, to that point, Mr. Smith, we asked for input from 16 parties and didn't receive any, but at our last Planning Commission work session, a representative group did show up, expressed a variety of concerns, some of which had nothing to do with the ordinance under, question. But what we asked was for them to please give us formal written feedback by a week from the meeting, which would have been tomorrow night. And they agreed to do so. So we'll be able to take that written input, sort through it, look at what applies to the ordinance, and then the stuff that doesn't, because there were some things that had to do with city council, and that goes off, to somebody else. But hopefully, at our next meeting, we'll be able to zero in on those things, and we'll go from there.
The next page, the first two items here. The first one is comprehensive plan itself. Now, for those that we have a lot of new Planning Commission members, also with you are a council member, Ron Monahan came into City Council a little over a year ago, wanted council to consider some property that was south of Anderson Pond Road. It was called Ashmore Tract.
and Bonner Baker, who brought a plan to the city, and for us to even consider this and to think about what we should do, the comprehensive plan was nowhere near the area. So at that time, there was a burning issue of we need to go ahead and move the comprehensive plan down to Anderson Pond Road below it. And that brings up the initial discussion we had today was, do we want to set some limits or areas of consideration as where should the city really be striving to go to? If you had gone to this area, to the Anderson Pond Road, there's about a mile or so between Chuck Creek and this area. And actually, we have very little property bordering Chuck Creek in the city. After you go further to the north of there to get into the city limits that, which is Springstone, Stratford Hall. So it's again, what is the natural boundary? What is the logical boundary? What is the boundary? You know, all those can be different things. And where should the city consider the concentrating its planning to? So this could still be relevant. It may not be relevant anymore. Same thing to the east was when we had a Crowland company come in. That housing development along Tubeck Road. It would run from the railroad track to Tubeck Road. We have been contiguous to it through Diodora Plantation. And so it's a question of, do we want to go that far east or not? It's outside of our comprehensive plan area. We now moved our comprehensive plan area to I-20. So we now have a plan for that road. We have a pretty much of a natural boundary on the west side, being the Northwest Bypass, 118, a large portion of that. We start getting to other water and sewer districts. You know, as mentioned earlier, it doesn't matter if we serve water or sewer or both to it. A large number of communities in South Carolina serve no water or sewer. It's done by an outside entity, specials, purpose district, Charleston. Charleston's not in the water and sewer business. So water and sewer are important tools to get people to do the right type of planning and building, but it's not a necessity whether or not they're inside the city. So it's just something to consider. Now, we have Diodora Plantation, it's on our sewer lines. In fact, our sewer authority stretches way beyond 302 and 278. Orange County. We serve them in the sewer. We serve them in the water, but Couch and Mountain Rinse cannot come in the sewer business right now by state and boundary mandates. So again, it's something that will have to be mulled over. We're not going to decide anything tonight. But the question is, do we keep this on for next year on action agenda?
Are we, at this time, on the south side of Aiken, getting into the new Ellington Water District?
Yes, we are.
Or do we have properties that we can still serve?
There's probably some we can still serve, but right now, we had to move the boundary for Phase 4 on Woodside. This Ashmore track that Ron Monahan wanted would have been, if not totally, pretty much totally in the new Ellington District. It gets a little fuzzy in there. Where is their district, where their district isn't. Honestly, we're going along Whiskey Road. South Meadows is in their water district. The area opposite, we did some rearranging of the boundaries in there at the time to say, yes, you serve this, we'll serve this. So we're bumping up against the boundary there. Again, doesn't mean the city can't annex New Ellington's water and sewer district if that's what the council chose to do. Another alternate thought is North Augusta. They have lots of their property now inside the city. It's not even their county.
But if we're bumping into their water system now, I mean, would that not be a clean boundary or a pretty clean boundary as far as growth on the south side?
I believe it is, and let me give you one more reason why I also feel that way. The further south you get, they call it the coastal area, because you're being lower in elevation. The lower in elevation, the more pressure you build up within the water lines. On the south side of Aiken, many of our residents have water pressures of over 120 pounds per square inch. Your normal pressure would be more like 80 pounds per square inch.
you start getting much higher than that, you have to start going to a split level system. You have this system here is on one pressure level, and this system, if you were in more of a mountainous area, you'd probably be two areas, three areas, in different. North Augusta's got two levels. And we're starting to see more and more problems on the south side. There's a gas tank with pressure regulator valve. If something happened to that, lots of problems can occur. So that's just one more added thing. And so I always thought that you get down to Anderson Pond Road, that's, in my opinion, you have to start looking about how far the police can go, how far the garbage truck's going to go, how far you continue providing these services that people expect on a daily basis. A lot of considerations. I know from Ed's standpoint, my standpoint, trying to come up with borders or boundaries that it's not an absolute, but these are boundaries that you more or less say, this is our planning area that we want to more or less fit into. Now, if something comes along that everybody says, this, that's great, and you want to have it in the city for whatever reason, we can always reconsider that. But having boundaries is a good thing.
Well, in this, the property in question, the property that the county is rezoning to the
county. That's right. That's what I was going to bring up, is that whole 2,000 acres, of which 600 was the Monahan thing, have all now been rezoned to 5-acre RS5 horses. Yeah, so, and they're actually working on the eastern half of that now, all the way over to Silver Bluff. So we have a natural green boundary, if you will, and so it's bounded both by New Ellington Water District. I think it's over to Jackson, and what is going on?
You get into the Silver Bluff Fire District as you go a little further to the west. Our feeling on staff, Bill Reynolds, myself, and Evan sat down 2 weeks ago. We more or less agree that we personally don't feel we need at this point in time to do a conference plan for the side. That's just our thoughts, our feelings. It certainly changed from when we put this on the list a year ago.
Maybe should that be stated? I mean, I was just thinking, if you're looking for something to help you in a decision-making process, then maybe.
If that's the consensus of council, that'd be enormously helpful to us.
Mm-hmm. Now, from a council standpoint, I think at some point in time, it would be great to sit down and have a separate meeting, start saying, where do we want the boundaries on this? Now, as a city manager, I should probably be saying, boy, the bigger the better. I don't feel quite that way. I feel that the better is better, not bigger.
What would you think of this? Because ultimately, we only recommend, and even if we recommend against something, they come to you. But for consistency's sake and for simplicity's sake, if we received an application for either city services or annexation outside of the comprehensive plan area, whether it's east, west, north, or south, what would you think of just as an operating practice for us to recommend against approval of that application, knowing that it will go to council and then you can decide, you know, what you want to do? Because then we would be consistent and we wouldn't be having debates without guidelines, knowing, you know, how to reach the kind of decision that council would probably look favorable upon. Otherwise, in the absence of guidelines, that's what we'll be doing. It'll be Elizabeth's opinion and Peter's opinion, and then I'll say, she says yes, he says no, and I say, I don't know. So that's
good idea. Wait, Gary has something he wants to say.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this. Let me just suggest my concern with that. Okay. Y'all have done it in White Lakes. My job a little more difficult. After the after y'all have your meeting where you just, what happens is somebody pipes up during the planning commission meeting and says, well, this isn't addressed by the comprehensive plan, so I vote that we not approve this. And so there's very limited discussion from the planning commission's perspective. There's really no discussion. It makes a bunch of, he'll make 10 recommendations about possible conditions that you might put on the annexation. And none of those conditions are discussed.
because you would make the decision as a commission, we're just going to pass this along with a vote of no, because it's not in the comprehensive plan. Well, none of those conditions are discussed in council. When I do the ordinance, basically what I'm doing is copying Ed's memo, including those 10 conditions that weren't discussed. And council gets them and says, well, what did the planning committee say about this? And, of course, nothing was said about it because it wasn't in the comprehensive plan. And, you know, it may or may not be a good idea, and council may or may not decide to allow the annexation or not allow the annexation. But they really haven't gotten any input from you guys as to whether Ed's proposed condition 3 was a good idea or not. So that's the concern I have, is y'all really haven't discussed any of the details or the merits of the application. You've just looked at it and said, well, it's not in the comprehensive plan, so we shouldn't do anything with it. So council ends up passing an ordinance, and they may not have gotten input from you guys. It probably wouldn't have been helpful if you had actually. You can still recommend, you know, we don't like this, not the comprehensive plan area, but we did go ahead and consider Ed's 10 proposed conditions, and we like condition 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but we don't like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Well, Gary, may I respond briefly? We have a wonderful staff, and Ed is a great guy for us. I think the reality of the situation is that it is extraordinarily unusual for us to take issue with those individual conditions that are proposed. If council is of mind to say that as a general rule they do not look favorably on such extensions outside the comprehensive plan area, it seems to me a significant waste of our time to go through these things that, you know, are almost universally sensible conditions when council, if it chose in that unusual instance for some unrecognized aspect of the public good that slipped by us, council can look at that, and I bet council has the same capacity we do to say we like ABC. I can't say that I know of instances where we have put a lot of effort into selecting individual elements from his and his staff's recommendations where council seemed to be particularly engaged by that one way or the other.
Well, there may be conditions that Ed proposes that you guys consider that the developer himself may or may not be actually able to do, but y'all didn't discuss it with the developer at the meeting because y'all went ahead and said it's not in the planning, it's not in the comprehensive plan area, so let's just vote not approve it.
Well, Gary, but at the public hearing, what would happen is the developer would have the opportunity to come up, present their his or her case. We then ask, do you have issue with any of these 10 or 11 conditions that he has, you know, the staff has recommended? And they say, I don't like one or two, or I agree with all of them. And that's a matter of record. And then, you know, you have the public hearing. Anybody else can speak that wants to. And then we would call for the vote. I guess we'd have to decide either you don't have a public hearing, which that doesn't seem quite right, or you have a public hearing, but it's with the understanding that we're going to vote against, or to recommend against. So everybody's had a chance to be heard. Those options or conditions have been aired, so to speak.
What I see from Ed, it sends me a memo at the end of each planning commission meeting, so I can go ahead and start preparing my ordinances. And the memo says it was approved on a 5-2 vote, or it was denied because it was outside the comprehensive plan. It really doesn't go into the details of what was discussed. The minutes will do that, obviously, when we get those. But for purposes of preparing my preliminary draft of the ordinances, I don't see the minutes from the planning commission meeting. So it doesn't have that kind of information in it, that there was a public discussion, that the developer said he likes this, 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 or this, but the planning commission voted to deny it because of the outside comments. I don't get that level of detail.
It seems like, and it should be, because all meetings that we have, discussion, public hearing on, as Bill just said, we go down the list of what possible conditions, and, you know, everyone has their input on it. So, I mean, that sounds like it's just a miss, that information is missing that needs to be added.
You don't have an attorney at your meeting. Is Richard there?
No. One of the things that could always happen is if we get something at the city council meeting, and city council, and you've seen this happen, where you deny something, the city council sits down with the developer, hears about, we're you know, based on the planning commission meeting, we're making the following changes to the plans, and council is able to work out some way of compromise or way to work through the details. They always can in the first reading. If they want to have more input from the planning commission, pass in a first reading with these following changes, and if need be, they always send it back to the planning commission and say, okay, here's some changes we want to make or how we would expect this. Would you please review this? And we've done it. We haven't done it a lot, but I mean, we always have that opportunity to send it back and get some further comments, if that's the case.
But is it fair or proper for the council to provide the guidance to the planning commission that in general we're not going to favorably consider something beyond the limits of the comprehensive plan?
Now, if we knew,
and that's I think what you're asking.
It was a set and fast rule that you were not going to accept any request for utilities or annexation past Tubeck Road, that then we need to accept any applications.
Okay, that's what we need to consider.
We did that, but there's probably going to come along some point in time where something may happen, and it's kind of like, well, maybe we want to change that, maybe we want to consider that. And maybe those are the times that an event comes along and says, no, we won't accept it, and that would be the times that I would say, okay, let me bring this back to City Council in a work session. Maybe you want to change that boundary. Maybe there's something there that would compel you to reconsider that. In other words, because it's hard and fast today may not mean that it's the same way 5 years from now.
Well, and nothing is ever hard or fast. I mean, we're a governing body. We can change anything right. We want. But I'm sensitive to the Planning Commission spending a lot of time on an issue when they're not quite sure whether we're going to go with it or not. And if it's a simple matter of guidance, you might understand it. I'm very new to this, but the comprehensive plan is the Bible.
That there can be changes. We can go beyond the comprehensive plan if we have a good reason to do it. So state, and it's happened on occasion.
Mm-hmm. I understand. But Roger just addressed that unusual situation where he can handle it in staff and in work session. But if we have a policy that we're not going to consider projects beyond a comprehensive plan, at least it respects the time of the Planning Commission so that they're not going to be compelled to go through the process when they already know that we've in advance said, no, we're not going to do it. I recognize that.
Yeah, and if we have that clearly stated somewhere, that there won't be any changes. This is it. But that's one thing. But the comprehensive plan is a guide to us, which obviously we use 99.9% of the time. But you can have some flexibility there if you've got a good reason.
Sure.
And I think we should always have some flexibility wherever we can. Because we don't know what's going to happen. We know what we want today as we sit here, maybe. But we don't know what things are going to change. And maybe a year from now, there's going to be something outside of that comprehensive plan in a certain area that would be good for the city. So I think we always need some flexibility to make that decision rather than have to wait to pull a committee together, to study the comprehensive plan, and you know how long that takes. So do a good job. Couple you, years.
You then would say the Planning Commission should consider anything that comes to them and...
Well, Dick, I'm not that hard on it.
I'm trying to get your position.
I understand exactly what you're saying, and I agree. And if there are areas where we can clearly say, and agree, majority of us, that yes, this is definite. You know, we're not going to even talk about going beyond that. And maybe it's a tool bag.
Well, we just talked about water districts as
maybe
one.
It could be that, yep. Or it could be a road. But this, we do need to talk about this. And as I said earlier, of all the items I think we could talk about, this is the one in which we can have the most discussion about do we or don't we? You know? And we've already had it. We had it when we got the tool back over there. And then we had it when we talked about the South Fork.
We're getting closer to a point where, yeah, there are going to be cases when knowing the general guideline that we have given them, they can save the developer time and money.
Oh, absolutely.
By telling them
that's we can do that, that's fine too. It deserves a lot more discussion. Let me put it that way. I agree with that.
I don't know what the real answer is, but I was impressed when the county did the task force was formed. And they came up with what I thought was an extraordinarily detailed and very good concept for the North Side. Now what it did is it took in a tremendous amount of public input. And there were very definitive ideas that people in that area put forth as to what they wanted that area to look like. Now, I think the final appointment, quite frankly, was there's much that the city did, but as far as I know, the county, that's all in the county, essentially, and we still haven't received any good, real participation by the county, and I think that's something we run into in this whole thing, and I think where you really need to start is when we talk about limits of Aiken. Well, it's interesting, we could all take a map and draw a line around Aiken and say we don't go beyond that, but I'm not sure that that's entirely the answer. I think it's not so much that we don't want to go beyond certain areas. I think, quite honestly, from my perspective, it's not so much that we don't want to take in this area or that area, but what is the quality of that growth? What is it going to do for the greater benefit of Aiken, as opposed to too many times where we're simply confronted by an application that comes in, a guy wants to build 25 houses, and then we're simply, it's an ad hoc decision as opposed to, have we really thought this out? Have we decided that this area should be residential or should it be whatever? Does it fit into what the vision of Aiken should be 5 and 10 years from now in terms of the character of this whole area? Do we want some sort of a green buffer? Now, if we do, well, then that makes, as Bill suggested, if we have those kinds of, if suddenly council decided that they wanted a green buffer, or green, what do you call them?
Green belt.
Around Aiken. I think we already have some of that. But there's no reason that the council couldn't say we wanted a green belt, and that would make any annexations and discussions that we had concerning a lot of these areas easier, because then we would have that as a real, very much more definitive concept of what council would like us to do. I'm just throwing that out, and I think that's something, sure. again, it goes back to, I think, the whole idea of having a more definitive idea of what, in terms of the limits, geographical limits of Aiken should be, what you want those limits to encompass, what should they be, residential, agricultural, manufacturing, industrial, whatever.
Sure. I think that's why we went ahead with the North Side. The county wouldn't do anything.
No.
And we want, you know, but many times we've been criticized about the South Side of Aiken. Why didn't the South Side of Aiken look like downtown Aiken? Well, there was no planning in the South Side. Right. So do we want the same thing in the North Side? And we said, the city said, no, we don't want the same thing in the North Side. So even though the county wouldn't get involved with us, the city took it on. And the city paid for it. As far as I know, the county hadn't paid a penny. So we do have a semblance of what we want out there, mm-hmm. because we've got the water, we've got the utilities going up to I-20. And any day, you know, somebody can come in and say, well, I want to put something here. And they can, and we can say, no, you don't get our utilities, we want it over here. But there's a lot we can't do because it is in a
city. I think that's one of the problems we extended, which is somewhat of a different subject, but extending our water and sewer line out beyond the comprehensive plan brings up a whole series of problems. We naturally encourage growth along those lines without the ability to control what goes there if it's in the town. I think that's another set of problems that you need to
control. Well, that's right. We have some ability here where something wants to go in and they want water or sewer. Right. They've got to abide by
they have to go by we can put those conditions in.
But how would council feel if we were to say something like the staff would be instructed not to accept any applications for services or annexation outside of our current comprehensive plan area, but if council wanted to entertain a specific at a work session, and if there was merit in that application, and they wanted to refer to the Planning Commission with some specific guidelines or guidance for us as we deliberate on it, then it would come to us as a normal application. That gives you the flexibility that you were saying you need. Now, I don't know legally, Gary, about something like that. But if we wouldn't then be looking at applications, kind of blindly, because we would know that they passed a muster with council and council had deliberated and there were some specific guidelines or guidance there for us.
I've just got a glance at the zoning ordinance and the annexation law. The way it's set up right now, you've got a process. The guy walks in off the street in the head's office. He wants to annex property. He's not concerned with the comprehensive plan. He gets Ed to give him the annexation application, and he fills it out and pays the thing. Then it goes through, probably works its way through the process. And I've got to do my research and make sure it's okay for council to say, or for Ed to tell this gentleman, well, if you're outside our comprehensive plan, you've got one of two options. One, don't file an annexation request. Or I can ask the city manager if I can put on a work session and take it to council. I've got to debate my own mind, but that's the proper way to do it. I can't see why it couldn't be, but it's part of it is from the chart.
Just so you know, the Tulbeck Road property is on the verge of coming back, so they're very close to applying for annexation. For what? Residential, lower density than what they had before.
Different person, lower density.
Lower density.
At the same point, I agree with what Bill said, not automatically going to the Planning Commission, but I'd hate to go to the other extreme and all of a sudden we have a bunch of work sessions. I'd rather rely on the judgment of our planning director and the city manager to clearly keep those issues that, wasting our time from us and only bring the ones that we genuinely ought to consider in the best interest of the city. That's your judgment.
I really thought though that everybody had the right, no matter how goofy their proposal was, to ask for consideration in the Planning Commission. I mean, I thought that was the way our ordinance is set up, that no matter who you are, you may ask for this. It may not get passed, but you'll be treated with courtesy, and we're not guaranteeing you anything. But I just thought there was a right to do that, to go through that process. And I don't know, somehow coming to city council first, I don't know, that to me favors a, I don't know.
Well, it just works.
I guess I'm not used to it.
And they certainly have rights for rezoning, and they have certain other rights, but city has the ability to control water and sewer, whether you want to give it to them or not. So if they want to come to you and ask it ridiculous, I want to have a piece of property in the middle of Palms Lake and zone that industrial, and I had the right to ask that. Well, the problem is it turned out. I have a couple of councilmen who will say they'd probably be happy with that. But I'll say industrial right in the middle of Woodside. But they could ask. They could certainly ask that. But as far as water and sewer are concerned, council has control. They could say, we want to stop the water lines here. We don't have to go ahead and serve the whole county with the water and sewer. Now, we certainly have boundaries where other water sewer districts are at, but we want to go north. There's nothing there. We can go all the way up to
Trenton, Edgefield area. You go miles and miles and miles past I-20. But is that something council wants to do? So you can set a policy and say, you know, we're at this point in time, this is a planning policy area for water and sewer. So it's a little bit different than asking some other things that are currently in the city and asking some changes. It would certainly help us and myself at least to have guidelines as to what areas you want to stay to. Now, so we can move on this thing here. The area of the south, is that something you want to take off the list? It seems like we're moving towards that consensus at this point in time.
It's pretty well concluded at this point, I think, by the fact that it is a natural green belt at this point.
Same. To the east, we see some merit. Currently, you can go all the way to Rudy Mason Parkway. We have that plan, comprehensive plan, Tulebeck Road. But my concern is Rudy Mason Parkway, that's going to be your next area that people are going to want to start looking at putting stores in and other buildings, residential, and you know, a natural area might be 500 feet on the other side, Rudy Mason, or 1,000 feet or something, so that if somebody comes in that area, which we have control over with our sewer, we could go ahead and say yay, nay. Now, I don't know what it would be, the planning would look like there, but again, I see some validity in going further to the east.
I agree.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll go ahead and keep this one on the list then. The next area that we have down here is the comprehensive plan revision. Every 10 years you do a major revision, every 5 years you do an update. In 2002 we completed our update. We really should have gone ahead and started the update a few months ago. We have it. It's almost, we don't have a choice. We have to do it. But we want to put this on the action agenda, and we really feel, in talking with Bill, that this needs to be our top priority. Get started on it right away. Start looking at what changes. It's probably going to take several months, because those words that are in the comprehensive plan of shall versus should, will versus could, you know, I mean, those make a big difference. And so, you know, it may be very simple. You all might go through it on the planning commission and decide there's very few changes. I doubt it. We feel that's our top priority, only because it's mandated by the state law.
That's a 5-year review, and that doesn't need a task force.
It will probably take some extra sessions on the planning commission's part to sit down and go over it, because it's just really going paragraph by paragraph. Just like city council on the old Aiken master plan, we spent several months just going through that. About every other week we had a meeting just on that alone.
Is Ed getting close to having copies of the comprehensive plan available?
Close.
I don't have them.
Well, so I'll put Sandra gave you.
No, she gave me the old master, the Lake and Master Plan. I don't have a comprehensive plan.
Deadline?
It's supposed to be done every 5 years.
When I meant for us, is it like July or September or December?
We would hope that by the end of the summer you'd have it done.
Thanks for asking.
Let me put this way, sooner than later.
That's
what we're talking about in our next meeting.
Is the operative date when we started it or when we finished it?
That's trying to be precise.
Yeah, but no,
we got to
get everybody's calendars.
The next couple things that we have, hopefully everything's all in order here, is the creation of a highway overlay district. We had this on the previous action agenda. It's in the hands of the design review board. Based on their recommendation, they're looking at the types of buildings and what the buildings should consist of. That will go ahead and they'll come up with some details. And when I would say major highways, we're talking about Lawrence Street coming in, York Street, you're talking about Richland Avenue, you're talking about Whiskey Road, Pine Walk, Silver Walk. So anything that's going to be coming in those areas, what should it look like? So that's going to be coming back to Planning Commission, then we'll have to come back to City Council for final approval. Any questions? Any problems keeping that on the list? Okay.
No, Roger, I think it's important to keep that on the list, and I think that's something that should be used.
Ed, I'm going to let you handle this one.
As Roger said, next Monday, that is next Monday, 24th, yes. You'll start considering the expansion again of the overlay district eastward into Morville Lake. And as you do that, you're going to be taking in, as it expands into the rest of Old Aiken, probably you'll be bringing in more houses or buildings that are somewhat substandard or maybe going in the wrong direction, going downhill. And you've got a building inspector who keeps an eye on those buildings as they start to go downhill. It may reach the point where he says, that building needs to be torn down, and it needs to come down by this date. But in your zoning ordinance, you've got some rules that say, well, if it's an overlay district, you've got to get approval from the design review board to tear that building down. So you've got a situation, we really haven't had but one case so far, but we're going to have more where you have a building official wanting the building down by this date, but you've got a process that the property owner is supposed to go through to get the building torn down. And we need clarification on what should take precedence. You know, is the public safety factor the most important thing, and that building needs to come down no matter what, and you ignore the fact that it may be, you know, 100 years old? Or is it more important to take the historic element of it more into account? And just where's the balance there? So there needs to be something in the zoning ordinance to make it clear how those kinds of things are handled.
I think we have a balance. I mean, I would go for number two, frankly. Because when I moved to Aiken, the Wilcox was condemned. And it's a doggone good thing it wasn't torn down. I mean, it could have been torn down easily. And because it was condemned. And you know, I think unless it's an extraordinarily dangerous situation, because, you know, if we get five neighbors to come up and say, you know, our kids are going to be hurt. Something that's a different thing, but there's so many houses over there that conventional wisdom might say there's no hope in the world for, but then look what's happened to so many of them, and they do look good, and once they're fixed up, I just think that we have that in there because of the fears of a lot of residents in those areas that they would be just wiped out. I don't know. It's a hard
thing. And if that's the way you want to go, there need to be some additional words in there making that clear that that's the way you want to go to clear up any conflict with the building official, the building inspector.
Shouldn't the building official be the deciding factor in terms of whether that building can remain standing or not?
That's a change point.
I don't
know. If you put it in an overlay district, you're ceding control.
I guess the question is, was the Wilcox in danger of falling down?
It was a dangerous building. I mean, I crawled all around it. That's why. You have to be really careful.
Do you propose to what, fence it off until you make a decision? Or?
I don't know the answer exactly. I think if it does go to the zone, if we make it clear that. If buildings officials determining that this is a dangerous building brings it straight to the design review committee to say, in their opinion, whether this is a building that deserves to be protected, maybe fenced off, or maybe it's not an important, maybe it's not even built well in the first place. Maybe it has nothing as a redeeming quality.
But in the event that they say, yes, it has redeeming characteristics and we think that it should remain as is until someone buys it, refurbishes it, in the meantime, if something happens, the city's liable. Is that correct? Or maybe liable.
Yes.
Is it worth taking the chance?
Well,
if the design review board says yes, let's preserve it as it is until we find someone who can modify the building and make it whole again. Are there provisions that the council might want to make to put, I don't know, 10-foot-high fence around it or something to prevent access? But even that, there's no guarantee that It's going to prevent access.
I don't want the building inspector to be making decisions in all these neighborhoods about which
building. This is the debate.
I think it's looking for a process. You know, if we're getting it, if we're all of a sudden shifting from the building inspector to the design review board, could we not consider a portion of design review board responsibilities for an emergency meeting to consider it? A demolition of a safety hazard in an overlay district. Something we've never done before. We've had emergency meetings.
You can do that. It's not going to solve the problem because of other timing issues that I will try to explain.
What would make your world ideal in this situation?
That's hard to answer sitting here. I mean, I think it's better just to raise the issue. And decide.
Thanks.
It's an important issue. I really don't have the answer sitting here. Okay.
May I chime in just briefly here? I'm sitting here wringing my hand. Number one, with the rare exceptions where a building is rendered unstable by fire or tornado or some urgent damage, buildings deteriorate bit by bit. We all know that. And unless I'm mistaken, I think our current historic preservation and design review ordinances recognize the principle of demolition by neglect. Now, if we're talking about buildings within one of our districts, doesn't it make sense for whoever is able and has the power given by the city to look at the buildings that are candidates, ones that are being so poorly maintained that they might well be described as being demolished by neglect. I was covered with mud from a little fight exactly like this about a year ago on a property of all places. Immediately adjacent to Hoagland's Gardens. You know what I'm talking about. And, 100 people had seen this very fine carriage building going down for the 30 years I've been in Aiken. And nothing ever happened. Well, if we've got talent on our city staff that can assess buildings and say, this is so bad that it's got to be demolished, I would think those same people could say, this building is nearly that bad. Design review board or whomever council wishes, take a look at this, decide if it is in the process of being demolished by neglect. And then we don't get to this conundrum. That Pete was pointing out, the city's got to either demolish it or throw up something right around it to protect public safety.
In the long term, that makes sense, but I think initially you'll be adding chunks of old Aiken. Today it's not covered by an overlay district. Tomorrow it's in the overlay district,
right.
And you'll be, acquiring or inheriting certain situations that maybe have been let go. So,
are there any set standards with regard to interior and exterior or foundation requirements that an owner, for instance, we don't allow a slumlord to have apartment buildings that are going to fall down. Somebody goes over there and says they're out of code, or the doors are hanging off the hinges, or the windows are broken, and you have to fix it or we fine you. Isn't there a mechanism like that that would cover these buildings before they got to that point as well?
Yes, there is. I don't know if Roger wants to comment on that. I mean, I'm sure that enforcement may not be perfect.
But would it prevent the building from getting to the point where it requires condemnation and demolition?
I would think so.
Good question. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is the procedure now?
I'm not.
Does it take a while?
This all came up. Let me tell you how this whole discussion came up. This was on the building on Pendleton Street on the east side between Barnwell and Richland. There's an old house there. Then I think Star Chemicals got it. And our building inspector said, we need to do something. And the owner kept dragging the feed, and we went to court, and then dragged it some more, and dragged it some more. After 2 years, we're still dragging this whole thing out, and it was getting more dangerous and more dangerous. And it's kind of like, then we started going, well, he could say it needs something needs to be done now, and the design review board, according to everything, says no, it doesn't have to be. You know, we don't want it to be removed. Who has jurisdictional powers over this? The building inspector, who's looking at the safety aspect, or the design review board? And that was the whole thing. We're just trying to, we sat in meeting after meeting debating this, and that's why I said, Ed, we really just need to get clarification on this.
So we really have nothing that has minimum standards for a building or a dwelling whereby that building or dwelling has to be maintained at those minimum standards without
the first thing that we do is repercussions. We could board it up. We have it boarded up. But
there, there's no ordinance that says you get fined or you get taken to court and we get a court order that forces you to do to bring your property to standards. There's nothing like that.
You know, in the last 2 or 3 years, we've probably torn down 200 homes because of the condition they were in. Just out of neglect. Gaping holes in the roof and ceiling, and we just don't have the standards.
Let's answer. I'm not sure we're answering Peter's question. There's got to be some standards that the building inspector uses in order to determine, yes, this building is going to be condemned. He doesn't just walk up and say, well, I think this building needs to be condemned, I hope. There's got to be some standards.
It comes out of a safety standpoint.
Well, yeah. But is there anything written? I've never looked at this. I think there is some
language in the city code that talks
about safety hazard,
that sort of thing. And if you don't maintain a safety hazard, the building inspector sends you a letter saying you need to bring this up to code or we're going to demolish it, that kind of thing.
But there's something that's like broken in the hole.
I mean, it would be obvious to anybody walking by that building.
Well, maybe then.
If they're giving you a letter.
I'm sorry. If we have the standards that say if there's a hole in the roof, the building inspector has a right to go over and say, fix it, then maybe what needs to happen is that if it's not fixed within a reasonable period of time, there are some ordinances or laws from which there are strong consequences that are to be paid by the owner of that particular property.
If I recall correctly, if it comes against structural safety hazard, that somebody's going to be in that building that could collapse. Otherwise, they just have to board the building up. We've been facing this for decades. Maybe we just need to have stronger regulations.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because it just seems that the building inspector can go around and say, you got a problem here, you got a problem there. And as I hear 2 years later, it's not taken care of. And so there must be something there that would force that property owner, when he gets something in writing from the building inspector, to make these improvements. And if he or she doesn't, there should be some dire consequences to that, either financial or whatever. And it sounds like maybe those things aren't strict enough to get people to adhere to what the building inspector requires.
And it comes down to a wealth thing for most areas where we see that problem, we tell the people to get it fixed, it doesn't get fixed, take it to court, it goes on for about 2 years, and we then eventually have to pay the money to tear it down. And this has happened over and over and over again.
And so we're just kind of stuck in this mode?
And it's, in many cases, because people just can't afford this place fixed up. And we've had 200 or more just in the last 3 or 4 years.
There's definitely a commercial property maintenance code for commercial buildings. You have to keep them up to a certain standard. There's property maintenance code for, you know, keeping your grass cut and that kind of stuff. But I'm not sure about an equivalent property maintenance code for residential. I mean, I don't think it exists as far as I know.
The closest thing comes when you want to get insurance. And your insurance man will say.
And this occurs mainly in the poor.
They won't give it to you unless you do this or that. You know.
I mean, we have not faced this problem in the middle class.
Well, maybe I've got too far to one side here. We were originally talking about a historic building or something that would need to be demolished.
I would say there's some play, a lot of debate on this issue. Now, you could, we could have it on the list, and I have it higher or lower. That's up to you.
What did you guys think about
it? Well, I mean, it should be on the list because it's going to be a genuine issue if we expand the overlay.
It definitely will be as we expand the overlay.
It's a genuine issue. If you're not going to expand the overlay, then it's not an issue.
Okay, I'll put this on the list and we can decide where it wants to go. An operable vehicles, this is, I'll call the chop shops. Very interestingly, Jane was involved in this about 3 years ago, I think we sat down with some junkyard people that would get five cars. They take parts from these five cars and make one car. Well, meanwhile, I got these five cars sitting around, and we have several spots in Richland Avenue and other areas that are, frankly, they're just going to be going right now. And but because of some issues that go along with this, we felt that we need to go ahead and look at possible changes to this ordinance, the zoning ordinance, and make some amendments. So we feel like this is one that needs to be added to the list.
Do you think the non-commercial locations are taken care of?
For inoperable vehicles?
Yeah, well, you think we're okay on what we've got for that?
No. Right now, in residential areas, you can have junk cars that, as long as you go ahead and they'll roll, they keep them.
And we really disagreed with that. I think we really ought to visit that again.
That's a whole other issue in residential areas on inoperable type vehicles.
Because I think in some towns, if you have an unregistered vehicle on your property for a certain period of time, it needs to go, or the city gets it, we get fined.
We wanted to do that, and there was a certain amount of resistance on the council a few years back.
And again, this happens in the board.
Maybe this is something the council ought to revisit.
Citizens.
The two are totally different issues. They're totally different issues.
Which is the bigger issue?
This one here. The other one's a property maintenance regulation. And really, council needs to wrap their arms around and decide what do they want to do. Once they decide what they want to do, then it can go back to the planning commission. But the last three times we brought it up, this we brought it up several times, the issue has always been, let's just keep it the way it is.
Well, I guess it would be helpful to know if there's been a change in council's thinking, if there's a consensus that they want us to revisit it.
On the residential, I'd say hold off. On the commercial end of it, we really need to get your sense of direction as to what should be done.
Residential is not a zoning ordinance issue today. It's a city code issue, which means it really doesn't have to be a planning commission issue. It just be council dealing with it.
Sounds good. We're going to give this one a number.
Okay. The next one here is evaluation of wording the zoning ordinance regarding overlay districts. Ed, you want to talk about this one?
During the recent St. Mary's discussion, there were some comments about some of the wording of the zoning ordinance that maybe didn't quite match up, or there was some conflict. And so I just threw that in as something you might want to look at to see if the language does need to be cleaned up.
Could I ask if we could meet together to do that rather than they do it all? I mean, I don't know. What would you, and we do it all for the second time? You know what I mean? And because from all of our different points of view, we might spot sentences that are real problems. But I don't know. I just thought maybe that would be one big evaluation rather than two big evaluations.
Bill Tucker was the one that made the point. I mean, wouldn't he be able to specifically point out the sentences and the conflicting sentences and then have staff look at it and say, okay, this is what we'd recommend, and possibly save us some time?
Bill does have that.
This is not a hard issue, but it still needs to go through the planning commission first before we go to city council.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And there are a lot of citizens that are interested in contributing to this. I've had some calls and say, I want to. And I'm fine. I mean, that's exactly what they want to happen.
You might want to give the design review board a shot at it, yeah, too.
Okay. Then we have the unified land management. Again, there's just conflicts in that that needs to be cleared up. So,
who would start with that?
What this is there's some places like Aiken County and North Augusta and Hilton Head and places across the country that have taken their zoning ordinances and their subdivision regulations and combined them into one ordinance. And there are pros and cons. A lot of places have not gone that way. I know it's Lexington County or Lancaster County has had it. They're getting away from it. So it may not be the thing to do, but it's something worth looking into.
But in fact, don't we run into conflicts now between the two?
So it's either you look at these two together here.
Yeah.
Either you can do this, which you unify them, or this, you just have to go ahead and
go
clean it up.
That both would, yeah.
I would think the staff could give us better information on that thing. Can't you review some of these cities that have it both ways? And
sure.
And what's the one that's doing away with it and then right. Come back to planning? But
I mean, if that's an item on the list, when we get to it, yes, we would do that and give that kind of information.
But in any event, if we don't consider combining, what you're saying is we need to evaluate each of them individually.
Correct.
Right.
So it's really a one job.
And you'll be comparing each one to see if there's something in one that conflicts with the other. Yeah, it almost sounds smart to combine them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a reason.
I think it is Hilton that did actually do that, but it seems clear.
It's a long time.
Yeah, and when you combine it, then the last thing that we have here is the zoning ordinance should be updated. As it says, it was done in 99. It really needs to, not a full revision to it, like we've done in 99, but an update to it.
But what about the fact that by the very definition of your being the Planning Commission considering zoning changes, we have updated it. I mean, people have made requests that were needed at the time, and sometimes they've been approved, and sometimes they haven't. I mean, I think it's been updated, just by the process.
Just one. You have amended it, you know, all since 99.
Mm-hmm.
Just one aspect of it. I have to do interpretations periodically where issues come up that are not clearly addressed in the ordinance, and I have to come up with this, you know, written interpretation. We've got 41 or two of those. Things that decisions need to be made on which way to go on, so that it's not just the planning directors, you know.
Well, maybe we could see those instead of doing the whole ordinance over, for goodness sakes.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is not talking about totally taking the ordinance apart and putting it back together again. It's doing things like the interpretations and some other issues and just bringing those to you and letting you decide what to do with it. But it's not a restructuring.
Okay. Any other ones that somebody may have that we haven't gotten to look at yet? Yeah, I think the second one that you have here, the comprehensive plan revision, is going to be really the major task. That's obviously the number one or the biggest task that you have. Any particular order you'd like to put these in? If we made that number one, do you have a number two or three or four?
Can I bring up something that I just wrote up on you? And I'll be very brief, and y'all don't even have to think about it if you don't want to. But I'm just so worried about moving into the county office building as a county citizen, not as a city council member. I don't want to tell the county council what to do. But as a taxpayer of the county vacant, I think some of us, somewhere, we need to figure out before that building is moved out to the bypass, which is most likely what's going to be the proposal. is that how much we're going to lose for our city by not having real business downtown, real people's business that brings them to town to live and do their work. And in an age of $4 gas or whatever you have, I just feel like, I don't know if this is planning commission or city council, or maybe just us as individuals, but I just fear what moving. I would love to know the economic impact of the city of Anchorage moving all those offices and things that are
going to be out
of downtown.
Who's part of the water tour?
Depending where they were at.
Well, I mean, if they're talking about going after the bypass, are they going to come to the city?
You crazy in this
work? Sure. Well, I don't know.
More than likely, but if they went to their tri-rod and station area that's out of our district.
Well, anyway, it's a good issue because it impacts the downtown that we were talking about earlier.
We've got our planning.
They can say the courthouse isn't going, but
one thing we've done as a council, Jane, I think, is set your request.
Yes.
And send a letter.
Thank you.
Council approved it. I've signed it. I don't think everybody signed it.
I just don't.
No, you signed it.
This is my impression. It could be all wrong, and I hope it is. I just get the impression that there's no consideration being given to that downtown location. And didn't you tell me there were, what, 8 or 9 acres there?
I think it was 9 acres.
9 acres, right downtown.
Are you talking about moving into the bypass? Are we still talking fine dairy here?
I don't know.
No, not necessarily. They're actually looking at, when we sent a letter, asked them to look at some other sites, they added 5 other options to that.
But they are not in town.
Well, Kelly Mill Plaza is one of them. The other ones are in town or just on the fringe of town. Like the one across from Aiken High School is in the city. The one that's at Richland and Buford is in the city. Most of them are in our water district.
Well, as a part owner of a small business getting whacked every which way by taxes in every direction, I think they need to look at land they own and figure out a practical way to save businesses downtown. That's my opinion. But I just think we all, as interested people, really need to keep our antennae out on this one, because I don't know what's going on, frankly. So I'll be quiet.
Okay, can we decide on the numbers here real quick?
I think I got it all painted out. Up to the east is 2, because that's imminent, needs to go on. Then I would say that
this will be coming back to Planning Commission, hopefully for the supervisor.
Yeah. And
which one?
The overlay district, highway overlay district?
July, probably.
Right. That's pretty soon.
So that's like 3 and then 4 or 5.
Well, then we have these over here.
Oh, yeah, all right.
I mean, we can just make them the order of the job.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, those 4 or 5. Makes sense to me.
What we'll do is we can put this, we'll just put this as number 7 in here, and it'll be a unified plan or revisions to the zoning ordinance, etc. And frankly, I'm not too sure if you'll get this far anyways, because there's some really big ones here to take care of. Any other comments?
6 and 7.
This is 6, and then 7 would be, really looking at a combination of these 3. If you do the first one, you really aren't into the other 2. So. Am I correct?
They all become a part of it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So operable vehicles there, one board in 6 and 7.
I was putting that at the bottom of that list. And I think it goes to the bottom of that list.
But it wouldn't take as much work.
It's not really a big question.
It's one of those that's just been hanging out there for years. And Jane knows more about that than, I mean, she's had it in that meeting and was like, what are you doing?
You know, by the end of the meeting, you could see, you almost thought they were doing a public service. No, really. And you know, in some ways, nothing and simple and fun.
And they're local business person trying to make a living.
How do you work out of cars?
Bigger fence. Okay. Does that do it for everybody?
Thank you very much.
Good session.
Longer.
Yes, we did.